Hello, welcome to the Mythology Marksmanship Podcast, and today I've got Chad Heckler on the phone here. How are you doing, Chad?
You know, I'm doing pretty average today, but my average is kick-ass.
Well, that's pretty good. I know you're like a proud new owner of an airplane. I don't know if you wanted that to be public knowledge yet, but that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's not finalized yet. We're going through inspection and everything like that, so yeah. I'm excited about it.
I'm extremely jealous.
Yeah.
It's like a dream. So I can see how your average would be just fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I always tell everybody when they ask how I'm doing, but I kind of do a lot of things to make sure that my days are pretty good. I mean, any day you wake up is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I know. Because at least we're breathing, because we know one day we ain't going to be, right?
Yeah, did you ever hear that? It's like a Facebook or reel or whatever, where the guy—he's a mindset guy—and he's like, "How would you like to get $10 million?" And the guy's like, "Oh yeah, dude, I would love that. That would be so awesome." He's like, "Do you think you could put a frown on your face if you had $10 million?" Like, "No way, dude. I would be happy all the time." He's like, "What if I told you that I'd give you $10 million, but you couldn't wake up tomorrow?" And he's like, "What? No way. I wouldn't want to do that." And then the guy's like, "Well, so you're telling me that waking up in the morning is better than having $10 million? And they're like, "Yeah, I guess I am." It's like, "Well, then why don't you feel that way every damn day?"
It's a good point.
Yep. Make it happen.
That's a good point. Well, there you go. Logic.
It's just perspective. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's just like, you can do that about a lot of things, you know, like shooting.
Yep.
When I was having a tough time earlier this spring, I had to realize like what I was doing it for, you know,
mm-hmm.
and like kind of sit back and be like, because it's real easy for a guy that gets used to success to just be like completely bummed out and just want to go home and
for sure, man.
Yeah,
I've been
no
there
fun.
Just like you. You've won way more matches than I have, but I can definitely tell you that I know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, yeah, because you even – okay, so, I mean, I always didn't expect myself to win, right? Like, I still – there was a standard, like, I felt like I wanted to be here. I wasn't going to be happy or whatever. And then it kind of grows from there. But, like, you know, maybe you're the guy that listening that's like, man, I just want to be in the top 50 or whatever, you know. And then you're not in the top 50, and then you're just like, gosh – what am I doing, you know? You slip out of it once or twice or three times in a row and you're in a slump. It's easy to get real, real down on yourself fast. And then you just realize at the end of the day, like, man, this doesn't even matter. Nothing about this matters. Like, everything that matters is back at home.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you said it best, all of that. That all makes sense to me. And that's sometimes what you have to remind yourself of on the way home from a match where you got beat up pretty bad. It happens to all of us.
You also
see you a
have
lot less than all of us. But.
You have to. You have to also remind yourself that, I think, when you got the first place trophy in the backseat, you got to remind yourself that it doesn't matter too, because at
for
the
sure.
end of the day, this is just about the equivalent of underwater basket weaving, and there's only a few people in the world that even care about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, but one more thing I'll say on that is what we're doing is not easy, and it's not about the trophy. It's not about, like, it's not about a lot of things, but it is about personal growth, and you have to let yourself feel good about accomplishing something that's difficult. And I try to let myself do that even if I don't go home with the first place trophy. I try to find something about the match or the weekend that I can say, okay, you know, that was awesome. And, you know, there's a couple things that weren't, like the few mental errors I may have made. But, you know, I think you and I both still won matches when we have made multiple mental errors. And to me, that's very interesting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This weekend I made a couple of them that I shouldn't have and still somehow won. And I felt like the other guy was going to, like, slaughter me. And then all of a sudden I won by 6 points after being down one on day one. So it's like.
Yeah, congrats on that, by the way. Oh. You and Brady both killed it. And Brady Keating.
Yeah, he did good. It was a good time. But, I learned one thing because there was like something else I was listening to, and they're talking about these what was a guy, he's a professor that talks about dopamine systems and like how our brain works with reward and all this stuff. And if you think that all of a sudden that you're gonna get this, you will get this huge dopamine release when you win or you achieve your goal and all that. But the thing is most of the satisfaction that you get along the way, or most of the satisfaction comes during the process of achieving the goal, not actually achieving the goal. There's like this short release, and then all of a sudden you go back down. And if you think that at the end your mind, you build this up to where like that is your reward, and you don't actually relish in the process, then you can get burned out real easy, because you'll notice when you win, you'll be like, man, I still have to put my pants on one leg at a time like everybody else. And it's not that big a deal. I'm just an average human doing average things.
But I think that that comes with age and wisdom, like being able to appreciate the process instead of the outcome. It's like restoring a classic car. That was the best. That was like one of the most fun things that I ever did. When it was done, I didn't give a crap about it. It just sat there. But like solving all those problems and stuff, like I've just always been able to focus on the process and get enjoyment out of actually getting things done versus when the thing is actually done, if that makes sense.
I know, but I think it's hard as humans to even get that process, right? To like it, or not that process, but like that perspective on the process. I just I it is, at least it was, it took me a while to figure that out. And then when I
Well, I've
realized
got like
that,
10 more years on you, so.
well, yeah, I know. It just took a while to figure out, like, hey, man, like, you know what? I think the thing I like the most about this whole thing, or really most things in life, is the struggle and the journey, you know?
Yeah, it's shooting scared. That
Shooting
like gives you
scared.
that rush. That gives you rush for 2 days versus driving home with the trophy. You got a few hours to throw it on your pile of trophies when you get home. But it's so funny. Like I think I told you this. I messaged you right after I heard you say that on Phil's podcast. Like we still haven't released our episode yet, but I described that exact same thing. So I can't wait for you to hear. I think we're gonna put it out this week. So
I think that'll
if
be cool.
yeah, it'll be interesting because my description of yours is shooting scared. Mine is more feeling of extreme confidence coupled with or juxtaposed with extreme uncertainty. And the uncertainty is where I live most of the time to make sure that I've crossed off everything that I possibly can from the list of things that could screw me over. So, yeah, I think what we're talking about is very similar. Yours is a little more intense than mine. Mine is a more stress and depressing way to live in and to match. Yours is like a high level of anxiety that I've shot with you a few times and I told you, man, it stresses me out.
Oh yeah, Paul, or I mean Brian Neese is like, dude, if I didn't know you and realize like you're gonna come out the other side this fine, he says, I would tell anybody else to just say, hey man, you need to calm down. This is gonna really affect you in a negative way.
Yeah, but I've seen it work for you, so
Well,
I
it just
agree.
keeps me
It's your thing.
kind of locked in, you know, to the moment. And yeah, I let myself go there, and I get it. Most people probably don't want to be there, like just want and like it's just like a sheer like that is too stressful. I get that. So.
The cool thing is that it's your superpower, but it's also other people's kryptonite. So when you're acting like, when you have that playing out in the stage or in a squad, it's good for you and it's bad for everyone else. So it's just to your benefit times two.
Yeah, but I don't think I try not to negatively impact the people around me though. I don't know if I do, but I try not to.
Well, either way, you're gonna do what you gotta do.
Yeah.
People will either feed off of it or ignore it.
Yep. Well, that's what I
So,
think most
but
people do, is ignore me.
I just thought it was interesting
Yeah.
hearing that.
I had something to say and I can't remember. That's okay.
Right.
Well, shoot, now it, yeah. Well, it doesn't matter, I guess. So.
Yeah, well, what are we talking about? I just answered the phone, so.
I know.
What are you thinking?
So I wanted to talk about, so I've been kind of itching to talk about the Ruger Koenig match because it's such a, it's not, I don't know, I'll ask you to agree or disagree or give your comments on what you think about this comment, but I feel like that match is different than most of the matches that you'll go to.
Yeah, it was definitely the most unique match I've ever shot.
What makes it that
well,
way to you?
I would say that mainly the big thing for me, which is what Francis and I were talking about, was the fact that you don't get a lot of time to see the stage before you're asked to actually shoot the stage. Because of the carts, like, you got to take those side by sides, and you might not even know the target direction, the shooting direction. Now there's people that have shot it before that kind of know the terrain and they were able to prep. But for me, I was just constantly anxious about getting ready for the next stage, and I could not do that. I thought that the terrain was pretty straightforward, you know. I really wasn't second guessing the wind as much as I thought I would, but I hear that that was probably the lightest wind that has ever been through that area. Yeah. So yeah, the wind wasn't really a factor for me. I maybe missed 25% of my shots due to wind, and that, you know, is on the lower side of things, I think. So it just, I don't think it was a factor for me personally.
What was the larger factor for you? So you're saying you couldn't see the position, or not the position, but you couldn't see the targets from the position beforehand, kind of. Is that what you were meaning? Is it my wrong?
Oh, that's one thing. But the other thing I was really saying was I couldn't see the next stage from the current stage I was on. Usually after I'm done shooting a stage, I'll prep for the next stage.
Oh.
So that when I'm walking up, when I'm walking up, I'm focusing, you know, only on a few things. But this, I had to show up at the stage and, you know, get ready. If I was the first or second shooter, I only had a few minutes to really burn the targets into my brain and study the actual navigating the course of fire. So I really felt like I didn't have as much time as you normally would. Normally you could use that 20 or 30 minutes from the previous stage, you know, after you're done shooting to prep.
Or you can even get there in advance, you know, like you can't walk to the next one. You had to drive.
Correct.
You know, sometimes, I mean, in the case of like going from one range to the other, 4.5 miles.
Yeah, and I think that the bulk of my issues were 6 to 8 points worth of mental mistakes, whether it was navigating the course of fire or, you know, I don't think I shot the wrong target, but it was mostly the course of fire making some mistakes on moving. And then the other ones I missed were timing out because of I wasn't super comfortable with the targets. I want to say target acquisition was the root cause, but it's not that I didn't find the targets. It's just I wasn't finding them fast enough, so I ended up timing out. So it probably is target acquisition, but I never felt like I couldn't find a target. I don't think that they were trying to screw us over. It's just it's an environment that I'm kind of unfamiliar with.
Okay. So you're saying it just took you longer in between, like when transitioning from one target to the next than normal?
Yeah.
Is there anything that you've thought about, because I'm sure you've thought about it, that would make you, like if you got to do that again, you went back to that match, what would you do different to change that?
I would run lower magnification. I started doing that at the middle of day two, and I don't think I had to compromise on my aiming point, but I found the targets a lot faster, and I felt like I was seeing a little bit more. I'm just not used to that. I'm used to running on like 20 power. I think you said you do that most of the time too. Mm-hmm. But in this environment, I was burning up way too much time using that that level of magnification. So I backed down to 17, and sometimes I ran 14 if it was a very busy landscape.
One of the ones
I did time out on was that stage number two, where after the skill stage, where we had to go into that little cubby in the rocks and shoot shoot kind of on an angle up that hill.
Yep.
And you could not look at those targets from the shooting position. It wasn't possible. They didn't let you get in there. So
no.
I had a really good method for target location, but it just, I burned up time, man. I just used up too much time getting to the next target.
That was definitely not the easiest stage because you went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So you had, what is that, 9 transitions, I guess? Or no, yeah, 9 transitions. Well, no, because 10, because you had to transition between, you had to transition positions from 5 to 5 again.
Yeah, it was 5 shots from the prone, walk your way out, 1 shot each target, and then you had to move up to a rock, and you had to go far to near 1 shot. So, yeah, getting on that rock kind of broke my flow a little bit, and then I was fine walking out from prone, but then coming back, I lost it a little bit. I mean, I was 1 or 2 seconds away from getting the shot off, and I was clean. So, I mean, I dropped 1 shot because I didn't fire it.
I dropped 4 on day 2. That was 4 of my 10 were right there. Because that was one of my mental mistakes. One of the many at that match, that's why I think, like, for me, the difficulty of that match was, which I'm usually really good at, and I'm not sure what was going on or what, because I wasn't, like, sleep deprived, I didn't think. It seemed like everything was good, my gun shooting good, all that, but then I just made a few mistakes on procedural mistakes, right? I made those, mm-hmm. But day 2, or that mistake was not procedural, that one was, I wrote down the correct dope, and then I went to my turret instead of dialing 3.8 or marking 3.8. I marked 3.3, so 2 marks under a half, not 2 marks under 4. And that will get you.
Yeah, what's your process for that? Do you have a fix for that? Because, well, I can tell you what I do.
So you know what
it's
I did
only
do?
Happened to me once.
Right. So it happened to me. That's the first time it's happened to me. And you know what's sad is I actually double checked while he was talking to me. I literally looked at my dope, dialed to the first one, and then said okay, and then I would go to the next one, looked at my thing, and went through it, and thought, oh yeah, that's all right, and it was not right.
It's confirmation bias because you wanted it to be right. So here's what I do: I write my dope in my book, then I write my dope on a dope card. And then the dope card goes on my rifle, or for your case, goes in your arm board. And then I use the dope card to mark my turret, dialing each target and marking the turret. I'm guessing you do the same. You dial the target, then you mark the turret.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Then I ignore the marks on the turret, and I read the numbers back from the turret. I try not to, you know, look
so that's
at the
what
marks.
I was
I'm
gonna
literally
do.
Reading at the numbers.
That's exactly what I thought later on.
Then I use those numbers, and I compare those to the dope card. Then I can grab that dope card and compare to my matchbook, and then I compare my matchbook to my Kestrel. So I go all the way forward once up to the turret, and then I reverse it back using the numbers, and now I can stand at my tripod or spotter scope or whatever, and I can use my matchbook, and I have confidence that all those numbers matched all the way there and back.
Yeah, cause what I was thinking is I was going to go, because I go from my Kestrel to my arm board, and then I go from my arm board to my turret. And from now on, I was gonna, like, okay. Then I was going to dial the turret to where it was, read what that number was, then look at my arm board, and then dial to the next one and say, okay, that is at 3.3 or whatever. And then I would look at my arm, and then I would look at my arm board and say, oh, that's three. Actually, supposed to be 3.8. And that was my thoughts. Is that would. Because then I'm reading it. Instead of looking at my arm board and saying I want it to be 3.8, and I look at it, just like you said, it's confirmation bias. And that's exactly what it was. Because I looked at it, and it looked right in my mind because I've seen that. I've done that before, not marking the turret, but before when I go and I think, oh, 3.4. And so then I end up dialing 3.9 or something because I just went one under the mark, you know?
Yeah, and then, so there's 2 more things I'll point out, because this is probably an area, now that people are using these turret tape things,
mm-hmm.
Pretty much because of you, so thank you. I saw you do it at the finale in Raton, and that's where I started doing it. And then the very next time I did it was at the AG Cup 2021. I never tested it. I just ran it at that match, and it worked out pretty well. So
Yeah, I
there's two
want it.
things. Yeah, there's two
He
things. So
says.
hopefully I remember both these things. People will do this, mark their turret, and then they'll end on the last target, and they'll forget to dial themselves back to the first target. So I've seen people shoot the stage, and they're dialed on
Oh,
the wrong
yes.
target because they forget to dial it back.
I've seen that a
So
bunch too, where guys and where they will go up, write it all down, leave it on the last turret, and then be way off.
this comes down to you got to figure out a process, and I'm not talking to you, I'm talking to
No,
everybody else.
everybody.
Like you got to come up with a process that works for you, and you've got to not compromise your process. If people come up and talk to you, just like hold up your finger and say, 1 minute, like I want to finish this step of my process. Because if you get interrupted in your process, then that's when you're going to have a failure mode. And if you do get interrupted, you have to start back over. Like go back to the very beginning and work your way through it, and then come back, and hopefully you can mitigate some of those mistakes. But the mistakes are interesting to me because I preach trying to make zero mental mistakes all the time, but I've had a pretty good start to the year, and I haven't had a clean, mistake-free match yet. So you either got to like shoot better to cover up those mistakes, or you got to not make the mistakes. So I think that what you're doing is, you almost won the match. I mean, you tied Jake for the win, but you said you had 8 mental errors. Like that was
Well, eight
crazy.
points
That's crazy to
worth.
me.
Eight
8
points
points.
worth.
8 points worth. Yeah, 8 points in that match where you only dropped 24 is pretty significant. I mean, it's one third if I'm doing the math right. One third of your misses are due to mental errors.
Yeah, and usually, I'll be honest with you, usually I'm pretty clean on mental errors. So, I mean, most of the time it's one maximum, like one mental error with no more than 2 points worth, you know? And sometimes I'll make a mental error. Well, and I talk about the egregious ones, right? These are not like the little like I was in a hurry and I saw it go right of center, but I thought, well, it was close enough and I'm in a hurry, so I hold the same thing, 'cause you just didn't take the mental time to process that information, and you shoot the next one and then it either hits the same place right of center or it goes off the right, maybe cost you a point. We're talking like the whole match, you maybe 1 or 2 points of those ones where they're like little ones where it's not a huge deal. Like the ones where you got to be hunting for to find. I'm talking about ones like we just talked about where I legitimately missed two targets because I'm an idiot. Or like you shoot at the wrong target, which I did that. You dial the wrong target, which I also did that. You just do a bunch of dumb stuff throughout the day. Well, I did the dial for the wrong target a couple times. Shot the wrong target once, but for two shots. Like I shot at that one, the wrong target, and go clean over it. And I'm like, what the crap? So I hold, I measure, hold under, hit it, and they're like, and I was like, impact, right? And they're like, no, that's the wrong target. And I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
Your
Okay.
technique was flawless. You were just on the wrong target.
Yeah, I did that a couple times where it's like, okay, well, that was a miss, don't know why. And so I just went through it, like mechanically just did what it took to hit it, and then they're like, yeah, that's wrong. I was like, oh yeah, well, that checks out. Yeah, so dumb stuff, you know, but yes, you can you shoot good enough to overcome it? Sometimes, but sometimes no. Like especially when you get back east, I feel like that's where this stuff, like, there's not enough wind out there to make people miss enough targets, and then you can just like to where you can go up there, make some good wind calls and stay ahead of it, and not make the little ones that I'm talking about, the little mental mistakes where you really make good corrections to center and you really get things dialed in, and then that can overcome a couple of dumb mistakes because you're going to hit more targets overall than everybody else. So
Yeah, I think the more we shoot and the seemingly the better we get, I think that the mistakes cost us less individually. Like one mistake when I first started would cost me a whole damn stage. I'd get a zero or a one, or a two. But now I think if we're smart enough to just slow down and say, well, let's figure out what the problem is, you know, we might burn up 10 to 20 seconds, but you can make that up by moving faster or shooting faster if you have to. But I think a lot of people will just keep shooting and not realize that they rotated their turret or, you know, had the wrong dope for the wrong stage or something like that. So I guess that's one recommendation. I would just say, hey, pause. Like, my new thing is mismeasure, because I honestly, I'm pretty fast at making intuitive corrections. So I would kind of rush that follow-up shot and might hit it just like you described. You had the wrong dope on, and you hit it. But if I stop and I actually measure it and then I, you know, compute that and I say, okay, now I'm paused. Do I have anything else that could have caused this on my rifle, you know, or with my bag or whatever? And it slowing down forces me to actually find the root cause. And then I only miss one or two shots versus multiple, you know.
No, you're right. I've had that mistake in the past and I went, you know what? I just shot at the wrong target.
Yeah.
You know, and like you're right. Slowing that, taking that second to just be like, okay, why did I miss the target? Like, is it, but the problem, the thing that was weird is I went over top of it. So it's like, was it an updraft or something is where my mind goes.
Yeah.
And,
it looks for the most complicated solution.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or problem.
Yeah. Instead of Occam's razor, you know, like, what is that? The most, the simplest solution is usually the right solution. And where, like, hey, if you had just swung your rifle over a little bit to the right, there's the target, idiot. Or you just shot at that one twice and whacked it twice, and then you dialed three more tenths, and then moved like you were moving to another target, but actually just stayed on the same target.
Oh, you did that too?
Oh, that's exactly what I did.
That's awesome.
Yeah, no, it was terrible, but... Anyways, yeah.
It worked out okay for you.
Yeah, so that's like...
I mean, yeah, you would have liked the win, but you still got 100 points.
Yeah, I'll take 100 points. It was... But I was telling Brady on the way home, I felt like... I've never been so excited about tying for first place in my life. Because it almost felt like I stole something. And I'm not saying I'm excited to steal something, but I felt like I didn't...
You didn't deserve it.
Didn't deserve it. Or it was like one of those things where I just got... It's like winning a drawing or a lottery or something, you know? You're just like, woohoo. It's like I won, and I don't know why, but I won. That's so cool. That's kind of what it felt like. And like where most time I feel exhausted and like I just – like I worked for it, you know, which is fine. I love that. I love that feeling, and I love the feeling of working for it, you know? Like that to me – is fun. I mean, I'm not going to say that I don't like winning, but I really like the process of winning, like of doing the things right, of going over there, like you say, having a process and going through that process mechanically and doing all these things that feel like work and make and are robotic that make you like that crazy person at the range that like I go through these things and I go through these steps. And if I go through these steps, then I'm prepared. But then when you're prepared and you'll clean a stage, it doesn't make you look stupid anymore.
Right.
So it's, I don't know. I find satisfaction in that, oddly enough.
Well, what about making mistakes on a stage because you didn't navigate the course of fire? Like, those are the hardest ones for me to come up with a way to prevent.
That one, so I've thought about this a little bit. I don't know, what is your thought? I kind of know what I was thinking, but
yeah. I asked you first. I have an idea, and I told myself I had this idea before I shot this match, and I did not execute it because it's cumbersome. So I guess I can tell you what my idea is, but maybe it might be something similar. So I committed myself last time that I made a mistake like this to actually write the course of fire on the back of my dope card, like a summary of it. Or a pictorial or some visual representation of the positions and then target locations. And I did not do that because this match, I felt like I was constantly stressed to get my data ready and get enough wind columns ready. But I feel like if I did that, I'm a very visual learner. I would have that mental image burned into my brain, even though I'm not going to look at it during the course of fire, but just the activity of of visualizing it a different way might help me remember it. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, that makes total sense. In fact, I've done that a few times.
It's just cumbersome and it feels silly to do it. Like, that's why I haven't done it really.
Well, those are those things
I've
that I
done
was
it
just
before.
Talking about that I feel like I find satisfaction in sometimes because it's like they're like almost silly. Like, they're not needed most of the time, but yet if you do them every time, the things that they prevent is worth it in the end, right? Because it's like all these things that you don't think make a difference, right? Over time, like you do it for 2 days, three matches, whatever. You go, if you went through a certain process every time mechanically, how much benefit would you get? Well, you really don't know until you do it, right? Until all of a sudden you win three in a row, or you know what I mean? Something like that. And then you're like, wow, I did all this stuff. And then this is what happens. And the hard thing is doing the silly crap like that without knowing whether or not you're going to get the positive results that you want, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
that's
does.
Why it makes
and
it feel
honestly,
silly.
And honestly, like, how silly is it to do that 20 times in a weekend? It's really not that silly. And I think the reason, the only reason I didn't do it is because I felt like I was always under a time crunch. I never really got to a point where I was comfortable. Like, I barely had enough time to watch a couple shooters shoot before I shot after my data was ready. And I was, you know, I had a good plan. So I think my mind let myself not do it because it would have cut into other time. But obviously I needed to do it because I screwed up navigating two stages and cost me 4 points.
So one thing I've thought about is, so where I think most of the time I do it, and the reason why I think I had some of these procedural errors is because of exactly what you're talking about. I feel like most of the time, even shooting this match, there was something different about this one, it felt like to me. Or maybe it was just me on a couple positions, or a couple stages, but the ones that I had the procedural error is ones that I didn't get the chance to watch, like somebody else go through it. And I didn't get a chance to really watch, like, through my spotter and observe the targets good. Like, I knew where they were at, but I didn't, like, get the chance to really do that. And I think in the future going forward, I thought about this, is when I'm in that situation, I need to take 2 seconds because I know I don't have time, but to, like, maybe watch somebody go all the way through it. You know, four people go through it and really kind of like nail it down in my mind. Here's the targets and this is where they're at type thing. And this is where this is. I usually still get a good landmark, but I think I need to, that's where I need to do what you're saying. Take a second, write down, like, here's this, like the shape of where the targets are at in my, so that then in my mind, it's like seared in there. That makes sense.
Yeah. Can you imagine though, if this match was like the AG Cup where, you know, you only had 2 minutes to look at and memorize where these targets were. My performance would have suffered. We'll just say that. And
well,
my
I think it would have
been great anyway, but
it might have helped me. And the reason why is because the only thing I would have thought about when I walked up there, the only thing I would have thought about is I would have walked up there, got captured the direction of the targets, looked at each one of them, and wrote them down. I would have wrote down, here's this one, there's a landmark. There's this one, here's a landmark. Here's this one, here's a landmark, here's this one, here's a landmark, here's this one, here's a landmark. And then I would have...
So you would have taken it more seriously, you're saying?
Yeah, because it would have forced me. It would have forced me to do that instead of trying to do other things while I'm doing that, right? It would have separated the process.
So let's just do that all the time then.
I know. I need to separate that process.
This is why I tell people to shoot the AG Cup matches and compete in the AG Cup, because you're going to take things more seriously when there's more on the line and when the course of fire only allows you to do certain things. The AG Cup match, the format of that match is the most fun out of all the matches, in my opinion, because of what you just described. You have to be 100% accountable for your stage prep all on your own. You have to watch every shot because nobody's going to, you know, tell you when you get off of the stage where you were hitting or what's going on. And then you're going to make every trigger press better because you know that you're going to have to rely on that, where that bullet landed. So it all, like, it reverse calculates all the way back to the most important thing, which is natural point of aim and trigger press.
Yeah. Well, that's the cool thing about that match is like, or that style of match is It well, in my mind, it makes you really serious about each step, right? Like when I walk up there, like I said, I would have walked up there and I knew, hey, this is the things that I gotta do right now. And honestly, I'm gonna write this down because I think this is a good thought, is I really need to, and I usually do, but usually I have so much time to do it in, right? So I can do what I described before, is that, but over four shooters or for 5 minutes before the stage starts, because I know I'm first, and so I can walk to the next stage and I can get ready and go through and be like, here's this target, here's this target, here's this, and go through it mentally two or three times. Whereas at the AG Cup, you don't got that time. You walk up there, you got 2 minutes. You know, they give you the brief, and you walk up there, and like say, I would have captured the direction. And then I would have looked at the targets, found the landmark, looked at the target, found the landmark, got the landmarks all figured out in my mind. Then I would have captured them all, and then mentally I would have sat there and ran through it in my naked eye. I wouldn't even looked at glass hardly. Probably I would look at the mirage a couple times, and then that's it. You can look at mirage before you go on the stage, right? So I would have done that. I would have used that more to get my first wind, after having wind plans that I come up with down below, right? But which I do think that would be a sweet location for the AG Cup, because
I
everything
bet
could
you
be
do.
super blind.
Yeah.
That's a cool thought.
The only other thing I didn't care for or made it difficult at that match was the lack of good positions for the spotters to be standing. Just go back to that number two stage. That one was an obvious example because it was just tucked into this rocks,
So if you went above,
but
you could spot it, but the only problem was is your vantage was definitely different.
yeah, so that was very similar, like the mover stage. You could spot up on the hill, but if you weren't right behind the guy shooting, you really didn't have any perspective of how that stage was going to look. And
No.
then the stage with the fence, there was only spot for two spotters to spot that. So like the animal KYL
Yeah,
stage.
we
So there was
stacked
just a
people
lot
in
of
on that one,
stages
but so we had
there.
a few, but it was very tough.
There was just a lot of stages that made it hard to spot, and that coupled with the fact that you didn't have a lot of time, and it made it for a stressful 2 days of you got to be every moment you got to be thinking, how can I get some information injected into my brain? And then you got to do something with it, and then you don't have time to
I will
rethink it
say,
and revisit it.
not having a place for spotters is a real downside. I do not like that about that match. That if there's some or something that I really didn't like about that, that's got to be it. 'Cause, man, it's so nice to be able to do that. And I do feel like some of my mental mistakes probably, well, at least a couple of them came from that. But you know, I mean, I know that's part of the challenge. And I do know, like coming out here. There, you kind of find that yourself in that situation a little bit more than you do anywhere else.
Well, if you want to make a cool course of fire and use the natural terrain, I think you're going to come across it for sure. It's not like a square range where there's no obstacles in your way or line of sight. I mean, they did pick some really cool vantage points to shoot from, and I don't blame them for doing that. It's just I was not expecting to not be able to spot from the shooting near the shooting position, we'll just say.
Yeah. No, I get it. And you know, I think that one, if one or two matches a year have a few stages like that in them, I'm all right with it.
Yeah,
If
I agree.
there the juice is worth a squeeze, and I feel like maybe in this one the juice is worth the squeeze.
For sure. Yeah.
But yeah, I think
The
it's
course of fire was great.
yeah.
No complaints. Yep.
Nope, no complaints on that. I thought it was awesome. So, yeah, I think we got a lot of cool ideas out of this, because I know I'm gonna sit down and write some of this down, because it was very
I
enlightening on
still
some of
feel
my
uneasy.
mistakes.
I don't think we solved anything. I'm still uneasy about it.
Well, I feel like there's two things that at least I'm getting for me is the procedure. Of like, I do think that going through that and like having it, especially when I'm stressed, I'm gonna come up with a process of like, hey, I gotta do this in my data, right? Because I say dope rifle scope, well, I need to have dope, that dope thing. I need to have that. I need to revisit that and have it lined out a little bit better when I walk up to a stage, to help me mitigate mistakes. And that's why I'm always refining my process, right, is to do this. And the other thing was the dope, another part of the dope, which is writing it on my turret, right? Reading them backwards to me, like going, dialing to what my mark is, reading them, what the scale on the turret reads, and then looking at my armboard and confirming with the armboard backwards that that is correct. I think that's a pretty big thing. At least that's what, for me, that
selfish. I know you have your dope rifle scope saying, but do you have physical checklists written down anywhere for basically pre-stage? Okay.
So each one of those in my mind, comes up with another checklist. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but is it physical? Like, do you have a physical laminated card or an actual? Okay.
But not, I haven't laminated card. No, because I just have it written. I have printed them off before, right? But I can go in my notes section on my computer or whatever and pull up the whole thing I have for it. And each thing is itemized and says, hey, this is dope means this. And rifle means this. Scope means this. And I
whatever think, you're banging on there, you should stop banging on it.
My table? I was asserting it to myself.
No, I get it. I see what you're saying. And that's what I think more people need to do. I think, you know, working on my pilot's license drove that home. You know, pre-flight checklist, having your pre-engine start checklist, pre-landing checklist, like all those things under a stressful situation, things can get missed. And what's more stressful than getting ready to, you know, shoot a stage and knowing that you're going to be on the clock? So I think that I don't have those things ingrained into a checklist that's attached to my pack. And I think I need to do that.
Yeah. Adam,
I think it's something I need to do.
What's Adam's last name?
The guy that doesn't shoot anymore?
No, he shoots. I seen him a couple weeks ago. He's from Texas, but he has one. Yeah. He has like a clipboard with a checklist on it.
Yeah, I know Andy Slade uses one too, and he's shared with multiple people. So,
all right.
Like I said, I think that building your own checklist, first of all, building your own checklist is a good idea. Because it forces you to think about it. And the more you think about it and the more you make it your own, the better you chance you have of using it and sticking to it. Yeah. And then I think that people doing that activity, just the activity is valuable, let alone having the checklist and using it at a match. You were talking about Adam Robinson?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he also
name just popped into my head.
Yep. So he and he has like a thing, and then when he gets done with the stage, he'll go down and be like, okay, my shots went here, and so so he'll mark like, okay, I shot three shots, three of my shots went high on these plates, and he'll mark that down, and then if he has a stage or two where he sees that, then he's like, maybe I should consider taking a tenth out, you know, because he's looking at this trend of like, hey man, I didn't see one shot go below center, I saw a couple go highest center, and I saw some go high on the plate. I'm considering taking a tenth out now, you know, like where I kind of try to do that mentally, but who knows how many times I, you know, maybe that takes me five or six stages or seeing that five or six times throughout a day before I decide to do that. I don't know how many times it takes me to do that, but, you know, if he sees it, every time, maybe you can see these trends and get ahead of them. I don't know. That's pretty mechanical for me, and I'm pretty ADHD. I don't know that I could get that done. But right. That's why I have to simplify everything to say that's four words that mean a lot more to me than four words, right? They mean so much more than four words each time I say that.
They break down into bullet points for sure. Yeah.
And that's where it helps me, and that's where I'm always refining it. And like we talk about here, now a part of that dope thing, I will go into my list of things that I do in that process, and it's gonna be a little bit different. I'm gonna add to it to where now going forward, those things will be added in there. I think that's a lot of things. That's like you said. I don't think that many people do that. I think a lot of people would be they benefit from it. Because, I mean, you look at, like you talked about the flight thing. Like, okay, if stuff goes wrong when you're flying, people die. And so people have tried to figure out how to minimize mistakes in that for years. And the best thing they can come up with is checklists, pre-flight checklists, in order to save people's lives. And they feel like that's the best way to do it. So we're looking at trying to minimize mistakes in this. Nobody's life's on the line, but and so that's why maybe it's easy not to have it. But if you're looking at the best way to eliminate mistakes, and you look at somewhere where the cost is high in making mistakes, and they come up with the best thing they can figure, and this is it, then we probably maybe should look at that and be like, man, if we want to minimize mistakes, that's probably the best way to do it.
Yeah, and the other thing that they're back to the pre-flight and landing and takeoff checklists and stuff like that, they're very concise and to the point about what you need to do. So you don't waste a lot of other energy and effort. And they're big on doing things that give you a chance to be successful in the future. It's like there's a lot of thought that goes into it. So just by becoming more intimate and building your own checklist, it forces you to dig deeper into what the bigger purpose is of winning the match. Like, how are you going to break that down and do it? So I'm not going to lie and say it's an easy task to do. I've made some checklists for pre-shot and pre-stage and stuff like that. I just don't carry them around because I don't know. Like you said, why not? Because, well, it's not life and death, but if you want to win, you're going to do everything that you can. So let's commit to each other. I want to see your checklist, and you're going to ask for mine next time we're at a match.
Okay, I'll have it. I know me, and I won't probably pull it out and like check it off the list, 'cause I can my mind. I don't know that I can do it. I don't know if I'm physically capable. I think I'm freaking too retarded to do it. But I do it mentally. And when I don't know. I'm trying to. I don't know how to explain it. I go through. So that thought of dope rifle scope, especially. So when you see me get stressed. We talked about that earlier. When I get stressed, that's where I default. I start doing this and I start scrambling to get all of that done. When I start saying, hey, so and so is beating me by 3 or 4 points or whatever, and I got to come back, or like in Ruger or whatever, I'm thinking, frick, I'm at least 7 points behind here. So the only way I'm going to catch anybody is by doing everything that I know how to hit all the targets. So then it just like it forces me to go deeper in mechanically into that process. And that's why, like I say, I double checked my turret, but I did not have it in a way that eliminated confirmation bias, like you're saying. And I feel like that's a way to do it better, to where now I can add to that process. Where I do it, and then I try to go ingrain it into my psyche in practice, to where like having a printed version of it is not as necessary. But I could see how, and I do I so I think the process of writing it is huge, and then the process of using it. I think printing it out and having it in my pack is a good idea, so that when like I do end up in that situation, I'm like stressed out, or thinking of like, hey, what do I got to do to beat this guy? Pulling out a laminated card, looking at it, and just being like, okay, have I done all this stuff? Instead of relying on my memory.
And why wouldn't you do it every time? Because honestly, that's what we're talking about here. Taking things for granted is how mistakes happen. So
No, you're
I'm not
right.
trying to tell you what to do, but I think if you treat it like that on the easy stages too, like even the skill stage, something like that. So I don't know. That would be the real test for me, is if I can do that mundane task over and over again, on the
So,
easy stages, then I will definitely do it when they're hard.
yeah, no, I agree. I'm just trying to think in my mind, like, so some things you talked about in the flying deal, to do short, concise things that don't waste energy. Okay, I feel like you don't. And this is my thoughts. Is I don't want to do anything that's going to be wasteful, energy wise. And I'm not saying that that would be wasteful energy-wise. I don't want to commit to that, but I think that laying out and thinking, breaking things into simple, small, simple tasks, right? That's why I feel like my dope is, like, so in my mind, I think dope, rifle, scope, right? So dope, that needs to be a small, simple task or a series of small, simple tasks that I have. Like, for, I have, like, I walk up, range, and find the targets. Then I establish landmarks for each target. Then I capture the direction, put it all in my Kestrel, get a initial wind speed, and I don't write it down and yet. And then I go look at the – then I move on to rifle, right? Rifle, I get my gun ready for the stage, whatever the gear I need, blah, blah, blah. Scope, I go check my scope, and then at that point I'm going to pause on that one again too, because it takes me like three times of running through this before I feel like I'm done. And now I go look at the wind and I try to get the wind. Well, if it's simple, it doesn't take that long to finish this. But if it's like it was last week, I really can't finish this whole process until about two shooters before me. I try to get the direction nailed down and different options of the wind. And then I run my dope off of what I think it is. And then I write it down and then I go back through it again. Dope. So then I walk over to this gun and then I put the dope on the turret. And at that point, I need to, instead of putting the dope on the turret, now I put the dope on the turret. Now I need to stop there, go back through them, and read the scale and do that. That's what I'm going to add there. And then I go back, rifle again. It should be, nothing should change on that. Then scope, check the scope, make sure all the turrets are aligned. I go from front to back. I go one, and that's ocular. Two, that's all three of the turrets, and then I check that it's on the first dial or dial where it needs to be. And then three, check the objective lens, make sure that both those caps are open. And then I move to wind again, and I go back and I just sit and finalize and do my wind, because now I'm ready for the stage, and I should have eliminated most of those mistakes. But I have that kind of like ingrained into my memory, I guess. Is what I think. I could have that written down, but I'd do the same thing, if that makes sense.
Well, the cool thing about lists, and this is what I learned back in my lean manufacturing days, is like standardization is the foundation for continuous improvement. And if you find gaps in your system, the fact that you're using the same thing every time, which it sounds like you are, it's just not in writing. But
it is in writing, lists, but it's not. Okay. But it's not printed in my backpack. I can have access to it on my phone or on my computer or whatever. It's in my notes, you know.
Well, I think you're a step ahead of most people listening probably, but what I was going to say is like standardization will allow you to do something and measure it, because you're doing the same thing every time. And then when you find gaps in your performance or you find an error that could have crept in that's not covered by your list, now you just update your list, and your discipline for following the list is already there. You don't need to relearn something. You just need to update your list. So
that's where I'm at now, is I'm like, I just need to add that to my process. And that's when I say, oh, I'm going to add that to my process. I mean, I'm going to go in and put it, type it in my list, and then I'm going to start doing it and integrating it in the system. But I think you are right that I do need to have a printed version of it, so, especially if I'm going to change something, because now I need to sit down before the match starts, maybe before some stages, and read through it so I can go back and be like, okay, I need to remember that this is a part of the list, if that makes sense.
Yep, 100%. All right, we beat lists to death at this point.
I know, but I think it's important. I do think it's important. I think it's something that most people, or at least 90% of people, don't do.
Yeah.
And you convinced me at least to have a hard copy.
Okay, I wasn't trying to. I just, what if your life depended on it?
No, it's a good point. Okay, I can't argue with any of those points. It makes sense. Yeah. What do you do as far as like? Do you have a list as well?
Well, I have a list that I made a long time ago, but I don't even carry it with me. So, and to be honest, it's opportunity for improvement. I think that's why I'm hoping that you'll see me next time and you'll say, "Hey, show me your list." It'll be readily available.
Are you going to do like a clipboard version, or what kind of version are you thinking about doing?
I'm going to do a laminated version that can live in my pack on a tether that I can just pull out. And then before the stage, I'll have one, and the backside will be after stage.
Because what I was thinking is I have a clear little deal from Fehu that is like It's got Velcro on it, and then on the and I put my matchbook in it, and then on the back side, I have the turret or the picture of the reticle slipped in there, so that I can always have the reticle on me. I always have my matchbook on me, and I can wet erase on the clear and all that stuff, so I keep notes and whatever. But on the back side, I was thinking I can make I'm gonna make that into like a half sheet, and then slip it in there with my with the picture of the reticle, so I have that there. 'Cause why
I
not?
think that, yeah, I think that you have a slightly different way of doing it than I do. But the concept and the sentiment is exactly the same. I
Yeah.
think the thing you mentioned in there that people might not have thought of, which I really love, I do the same thing as I have a picture of my reticle. It's actually on a transparency so that I
Yep.
can slide it over top of something and demonstrate. I've used it when I'm helping people learn movers or whatever. I'll say, okay, put this over top of the target where you think you should be breaking the shot, and then you realize they're holding the wrong direction. You know, they're not leading it, they're lagging it, stuff like that. But I think that people should carry around a picture of the reticle so that for holdovers and stuff like that, they should be able to stare at that when they're not behind their gun and get ready for it. Because when I hold over, like I don't read the number from a card and then hold over that number. I already have a mental image of where I'm going to hold over and what that section of the reticle looks like in my head.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I've got it pretty much memorized, but I always just flip it over and I write on that turret. I write on the reticle. I'm gonna hold here. I'm gonna hold here. I'm gonna hold here. I'm gonna hold here. And I want to
For
know.
sure.
And sometimes it'll change, like what I dial, based on what the where I want to be in the reticle for windage and stuff like that. So, just little things. But yeah, I think it's I think we've beat some dead horses, but I think it's been good ones.
Yeah, I think organization is something maybe we should touch on someday. Whether you want to do it without me or not, it's cool. Like how you organize stuff is different than how I organize my pack and how I deal with dope management and stuff like that. I think a lot of people end up leaving gear behind at a stage or takes too long. Like they just don't have a good process for that type of stuff.
I
So
used to be terrible at that. Well, now you've got me interested, though.
But I feel like we've learned lessons the hard way that other people might not have thought of or didn't realize that there's a different way to do things. Like you described a clipboard. I don't use that. I don't use the tripod caddy. I don't use a clipboard. I carry everything I need on my person. I literally have my matchbook in my pocket because I want to be able to get dope and read the matchbook whenever I want. I have my Kestrel on my hip so that I never have to look for it. I have my markers and my alcohol wipes and stuff like that in my other pocket so I can mark my dope at any time. Like I can just stop what I'm doing.
So I
So
don't I do, I I'm different in the fact that I really don't use a clipboard either, other than I just have that thing velcroed to my deal. But I'm terrible. I get the dope or I get the numbers from the matchbook, and then I just kind of forget that it even exists,
yeah.
which is not maybe the best idea all the time. But I am curious because now you're talking about it, and I almost don't want to lose the opportunity. But what? How do you organize your stuff? Because I think you have something that you were thinking of.
Well, I would just, the clipboard thing is something I don't do, and I don't know why enough people or more people don't have all the stuff on them to deal with their data. I want to have it on me so I don't have to look for it. And I want to be able to read my matchbook at all times to be just constantly reviewing that, you know, because it's important to not screw up the stage.
Don't know.
So
I just feel like
my
some
big
match
thing.
directors are terrible at it. So I try to do it in that brief and ask all the questions, you know what I mean?
Well, I think that matchbooks are a sore subject for me, being an engineer and somebody that writes process instructions, used to anyway, for, you know, a lot of different disciplines.
Yeah.
The matchbooks are, there's a wide array of matchbooks out there, we'll just say that. In my opinion, that last match that we were talking about, there was way too many words in that book. There was some pages that were like half of a sheet of paper was filled with words, and then you get to the stage and you're like, oh, this is pretty straightforward.
Do
It
you
looked
know
really
Ken?
intimidating on paper. Ken Wheeler?
Yeah, pretty good. Do you know Ken? I figured. That maybe could be a suggestion to Ken of having a like a couple throughout
A
the year,
template.
a couple of, yeah, a template combined with a training. And so like there's certain things like, hey, that like talk about certain procedures and how to word them in matchbooks, because there's not, like, I do think other disciplines do that, where they, I don't know if they train on it or if they've just been around so long that it, people know, like, okay, like we talk about hit to move on. That's an easy one. Yes. Every, and it's pretty much standard now. You're shooting a KYL, hit to move on. Or
that's kind of, that's a good idea. Like
hit or miss move
like
on.
A gloss, like a glossary of terms or terms that you should use. I feel like he probably just doesn't want to tell the matchmakers how to make a matchbook, but I do think there's opportunity to make them more consistent. We'll just say that.
Yeah.
And it would get the point across. It'd be easier for ROs to handle. It'd be easier for the shooters. It'd be less issues for the – oh, did you hear my rooster crowing in the background?
Yeah.
It'll be easier for the shooters and the match directors because they'll have less uncomfortable interactions. But I also think there's opportunity for those types of videos or instructions for ROs, like a general RO training, like a PDF or like
a video,
or like a YouTube video. Yeah, YouTube video.
Well, and that's maybe what the PRS could do instead of trainings. Just say, okay, hey, we're gonna take this format. Like you could talk about a troop line format, and you know people are like, and it says there's not. It's hard to write that. I heard somebody saying that or whatever, and they're saying, like on the one, you go one, two on the mover, one on the near, two on the mover, one on the far. If you just said, if there was a way that when you set it a certain way consistently, like, because there are certain things, like when you go to other styles of shooting where they say something and everybody knows what it means if you've been to those matches before, where you just say two mover shots, one near, two mover shots, one far. I feel like that's pretty easy. But yet there's certain ways that people could take ways that it's written differently. But if you had it standardized as, hey, like if it's said this way, this is what it means. You know, if that makes sense. And have a bunch of those, like you say, a glossary that's put out there. Yeah. And it's not telling the match director how to do it, because they could still do it however the frick they want, right? But
yeah. But
if you had
just
suggestions and
the description.
Yeah, so that then later on when the match director is writing a matchbook, it's already pretty much done as far as like it's pretty easy, you know. He only has to write a little bit. And like you say, having a template or something that says, "Hey, if you do them this away, it's probably going to be beneficial to you and the shooters."
Yep. Agreed. Yeah, those things can definitely, I think, just make the whole weekend easier to deal with.
So, I have a question for you, because you talked about organization, and I've listened to you and Francis talk about stuff, and you guys are big on knowing where everything in your pack is, and I don't know that I disagree at all with that statement, because the way I organize my pack is I have bags in bags, right? I got basically my backpack is a bag of bags, because you open my pack and there's not like a lot of loose stuff in there. There's right. Like I have like a bag that has all my cleaning and tools in it. Boom, bag. Then you have a bag with all batteries, extra kestrels, just trinkets and doodads that you might need, sunscreen and all that crap. Then I have another one with like shooting tools, like a compass if I need it, a spare arm board, a sling, different things like that in another bag. And they're all kind of stacked in my pack. And I know if I grab this bag, it's got this stuff in it. They grab this bag, it's got this stuff in it. And then my pockets on the outside of the backpack, they're stuff that I use throughout the day, always. Mm-hmm. The you know, like it might have a, I have a bag of pens, and I don't know where that is, with like a couple of spare little things in there with like some chamber indicators and stuff, and earplugs. You know, like I don't know. There's that, and I don't know. And then my bags that I use throughout the match are on. So my rain gear is on the bottom with my cleaning stuff, and then I have. It's basically done by order of what I use is the way I stack it in the bag. And then on top of that is like my plate bag and then my regular bag and my ammo. And then I close her up and she's good. Is there anything you do system wise that way?
Like you said, my bag is organized by order of how often I use the things. And so I guess without going through every compartment in there, sounds like I carry less than you do.
I know I'm terrible. It's like, and I fly, so that's why I started doing the bag thing, and then I got addicted to the organization because I want to be able to pull the things out that I can't fly with quickly, like my tools and stuff. And then, and the other thing is I keep a brass bag on the outside of the pack because I don't ever want empty brass going in that pack because I will lose one, and then I will get pat searched at the airport.
Yeah. The cool thing about the brass pack on the brass bag on the outside of your pack is, like, people start to see you putting it in there, and if they're picking up your brass for you, sometimes the brass will just make it in there without even getting it into your hand.
Isn't that nice?
Just put it right in the bag for you. It's awesome.
I think most people do it nowadays, too. Like, it's kind of like...
Well, I like to be able to take it and just dump it in my hopper when I get home. Like, there's a lot of reasons. I use a golf ball bag that's, like, mesh, so you can... The dirt kind of falls out of it as it's being banged around, so...
Well, I have a similar thing, but it's another one of those Fehu outdoors things. It's mesh on the outside, but he actually makes it straight for shooting, so it's kind of cool.
Okay, cool. I'll have to check that out.
So you have you're talking by order of which you use it, but you use the internal pockets of your backpack.
Yeah, I do. I don't put bags in bags. I've got the Kefaru Shape Charge with the Sherman pouch on the outside of it.
Shape
so
Charge?
I have, like, multiple. Yeah, Shape Charge.
I want to look at this. Sorry. I've been looking. I'm a pack guru.
It's pretty good. I wish it was a little more rigid, but it's with that Sherman pouch on the outside. That's where I keep my ammo, and I keep my rain cover and stuff like that in there. And then the outside of that has my bolt and my extra trigger. If I ever need my bolt, I know it's, like, right on the outside. And then there's lots of little things in the top pouches that I'll keep extras of, snacks and markers and stuff like that. But like I said, I carry a lot of stuff on my body because I want to have easy access to it. I really could walk around the range, you know, with my rifle and my bag and compete. My rifle and my shooting bag, I mean, like, aside from needing more ammo, like, I don't go in my bag a lot.
Yeah, I know you do that way more than I do. I probably should be better about that. So it's a lot. Is it just smaller than the 44 mag? Similar to the 44 mag, but smaller?
Yeah, I think it's smaller, yeah.
But you put the Sherman pocket on the outside to add some.
Yeah, I like having my ammo, like, separate so that I don't have to dig in my pack.
No, I agree.
And that's kind of water resistant on the outside of that. So if it starts raining before I get to cover my pack, it's protected.
I do like that. I've been wanting to get a ammo binder as much as it, like, pains me to buy one. I think I'm going to. But, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of nice because right now I'm lazy by default, and my ammo comes already in a box. So I just end up just throwing those boxes into my backpack and going. But
I just use the MTM box for the most part. It's pretty efficient.
Those are pretty nice. 50 rounders, I think, are the best.
Yeah, I've got that, and I've got the Armageddon gear 40 or whatever. But I feel like I need more ammo than that. I need three of those dang things for a Saturday match, you know?
Yeah, I do like the I do like the Armageddon 40. But again, that you can Velcro them together and you have 80.
Yeah.
And I've used that quite a bit because then you can load. I have 6 mags usually I pack with me.
Holy cow.
So I load all 6 and then have 80 with me. So I got 140 rounds. But not always do I pack them, but it seems like more and more I just got a bag of mags as well in my bag. How's that for a tongue twister?
Holy cow, that sounds terrible, though. Like, you got to protect your feed lips on your mags. I only use 2 mags. I have a spare, but I don't carry it around the match with me.
So they're all marked? And I know which is which.
Okay, yeah, I laser engrave mine. And yeah. I have an AW that I use and an MDT 12-rounder. So it depends on what the round count for the stage is, but I'll use the AW for, you know, 90% of the stages or whatever.
I don't have a laser, but I got a little tool that I probably will mark them with in the future, but I just scratch on them with a knife, certain marks, and then I know which one. that I like the which ones I like the best, and they keep one in my mag pouch on my side, one in a mag pouch on the outside of the pack usually, and then I keep a couple spares. Usually I only have, most of the time it's only three, but like, man, more and more lately I've been packing a bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
Just nuts.
It can't hurt. It's just more weight and space.
I know. It doesn't hurt anything. I just, whatever. I got, why not, right? So, anyways. Right. Well, I appreciate you coming on. I think we're coming up on an hour and 10, so.
Yeah, I got to get going to get my daughter from school anyway, so.
Okay, well. Anyways, thanks for listening, guys. I think this is a good episode. Chad's got a lot of information. He's an overthinker like me, so so feel free to simplify all the things that we said and use it for yourself. So, thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah, and if you guys for some reason don't know of the podcast called Miles to Matches, you should check that out. But I'm sure everybody on here is listening.
I should have said that, but I automatically assume that if you listen to this, you probably listen to Chad and Francis' podcast. But if you don't, check out Miles to Matches. Thanks for listening,
all right, cheers,
guys.
Buddy.
Talk to you later.